Dinah Lance is a fighter, and her one-woman war is against the czars of crime, the frightened men who dread the blonde bombshell, otherwise known as Black Canary.
Back to Flowers and Fishnets, a Black Canary podcast. I'm your host, Ryan Daly, and I've got a lot of ground to cover this episode. We're talking about issues 9, 10, and 11 from Black Canary's 1993 ongoing series, a three-part story arc that guest-starred the Huntress and Nightwing. If you tuned in to find out who won a free copy of the Black Canary and Zatanna graphic novel, well, sorry, I'm not picking a winner until December 12th, so you're just going to have to come back later to find out if that sweet prize is all yours. In the meantime, you can always stick around here and listen to me talk about some other Black Canary comics that are, well, much, much worse. Since we've got so much content to get through this episode, I'm not going to waste any more time with announcements or promotional giveaways. Let's get into these comics, shall we?
I made a lot of choices, most have not been wise. But I have some really good friends I've been fortunate enough to find. They get me through the lonely days when I want to stay inside myself. Get me out of my shell, out into the world. I am a coming back, I'm coming back again. Oh, I had lost everything and then I got back again. I dug myself so deep into a hole.
I'm going to give the creator credits for all three of these issues right now because, with one exception, they're all the same. Black Canary issues 9, 10, and 11 are written by Sarah Byam, penciled by Trevor Von Eden, inked by Bob Smith, colored by Julia Lockman, and edited by Denny O'Neill with Jordan Garfinkel assisting. The only difference in creative staff is that each issue was lettered by a different person. Issue 9 was lettered by John Costanza, 10 by Steve Haney, and 11 by Bob Lapham. Issue 9 was cover dated September 1993, but would have actually come out on July 20th, according to Mike's Amazing World of DC Comics. And the cover was provided by Trevor Von Eden. I have to start my review right now. I can't even get into the synopsis. This could very well be the worst comic book cover I have ever seen. The audacity of this cover. It feels like audacity. It feels like Von Eden is giving me the middle finger through this cover art. I get an overwhelming sense that this cover could not give less of a f*** about me, and would almost prefer I not read the issue. Like, if I saw this in the store in 1993, if I picked this issue up off the rack, I would want to roll up the issue and beat the retailer over the head with it. You need to see this cover. It's two women. That's all, just two women and no background, just a sort of orange twilight fade-out color from dark to light. One of the women on the cover is the Huntress, the other is Black Canary, except you might not realize that right away. Spoilers for something that happens in this issue, Black Canary gets a costume change. Gone are the two most distinguishing features of her look, the fishnet stockings and the blonde wig. What is left is an angry-looking woman with black combat boots, an aggressive biker jacket, and short-cropped black hair. This is the reader's first time seeing the main character in a completely new look, So if you're going to put this new look on the cover, it needs to be clear. You need to draw attention to it and say, hey, Black Canary's gotten a fashion upgrade or something. But they don't do that. Quite the opposite. It almost feels like they're trying to hide her new look. Well, that's hard to do when you don't have any background detail or anything else to look at. So Trevor Von Eden drew Black Canary and the Huntress very small. Very small. They barely take up any room on this cover. Like, their standing height might barely stretch a fourth of the page. They're low and brushed into the corner for a major text piece that reads down the side, "Enter the Huntress, and there will be pain and terror as two gallant women roam the world searching for a fiend." The total accumulation of the text and the title Black Canary put together takes up more space on the cover than Black Canary and the Huntress. This cover offends me. And I don't want to go on. I need to take a break. So, I guess listen to this promo while I reset my brain.
Hi, I'm Kyle Benning, and I love comics. In fact, I love them so much that I ramble on about them on a number of podcasts, all on one feed, found under the King Size Comics Giant Size Fun banner. I talk about comics with extra page counts, like Treasury Comics, Prestige Format books, DC's Dollar Comics, Marvel's Giant Size Specials and King Size Annuals, and much, much more. I also love to talk about DC's Crisis on Multiple Earth crossovers, free comics from special promos, Free Comic Book Day, Star Wars, my life as a Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles fan, random comic book back issues, and many other elements of geek culture that happen to strike my fancy. There's new content usually dropping at least once a week, and it's all found on one feed. You can subscribe via iTunes, just search for King Size Comics Giant Size Fun in the iTunes Store or podcast app on your iPhone. Otherwise, you can follow the podcast at the King Size Comics Giant Size Fun blog headquarters, available at www.kingsizecomicsgiantsizefun.blogspot.com. That's all one word, kingsizecomicsgiantsizefun.blogspot.com. Or follow on Facebook by simply searching for King Size Comics Giant Size Fun. So for snappy review and discussions on comics, new and old, usually done from the front seat of my car or my lunch break at work, check out King Size Comics Giant Size Fun.
Okay, issue number 9 is titled Enter the Huntress. It starts, appropriately, with the Huntress. In fact, she narrates this comic. And this is, of course, the post-crisis version, Helena Bertinelli, whose entire mob family was murdered and she became a vigilante to get revenge. Huntress runs down an alley from some guys working for a villain named Scimitar. That's scimitar, like the kind of sword but spelled with a Y because, you know, the 90s. She reaches a payphone and calls Black Canary, but before they connect, the payphone is shot up by the guys chasing Huntress. Cut to Sherwood Florist, where Dinah is walking around in her traditional Black Canary costume, thinking about her ex-boyfriend, the Green Arrow, when the Huntress crashes through the stained glass window and shouts for Canary to get down flat. They duck just as a spray of automatic gunfire shoots up the store. One of the gunmen comes through the window and Dinah trips him, knocking him unconscious. Then she and the Huntress throw the man outside, knocking down two more gunmen. Black Canary and Huntress rush outside to take out their would-be killers. Dinah beats them up while Huntress picks up one of their guns and appears all too eager to shoot them. Black Canary keeps preventing her from taking a shot and even disarms Huntress by kicking the gun out of her hand, even though it means letting one of the three guys escape on foot. After the two formally introduce themselves and leave the two captured thugs for Seattle police to pick up, they go back inside Sherwood Flores so Huntress can explain the situation. One of her girlfriends got involved with the wrong man. But this is a whole lot more complicated than the usual story that begins that way, because the wrong man was the second prince of the Middle Eastern Emirate of Karistan. Don't look that place up on a map. Huntress tells Dinah that her friend, Beth, suspected her boyfriend was dangerous, but didn't want to seem culturally insensitive, so she kept giving him more chances, and her liberal guilt led Beth right into the trap of white slavery. As she's listening to the story, Dinah is checking her fishnet stockings, which were cut up by the broken window. Helena mocks the stockings and says they're not sexy, they're old-fashioned. And Dinah ends up throwing them in the trash, because all they do is remind her of her mother and Green Arrow. The second Prince of Karistan is none other than the villain Huntress called Scimitar. We find him in his harem of white sex slaves, which happens to be aboard a ship docked at Pier 17. Scimitar receives the news that his men failed to kill the Huntress, but he's not too worried. They're disposable, and he has another plan to get rid of the vigilante. Meanwhile, one of his slaves has gone on a hunger strike to protest her current situation. The slave was formerly the CEO of a tech firm that could have rivaled Microsoft in the early 90s. It seems that Scimitar has expensive taste in his slave women. He commands her to eat, she spits in his face. Scimitar gives her an ornate ceremonial dagger and says that she can go free if she kills him. She gives it a shot, but she's simply no match for a guy named Scimitar. He murders her effortlessly. Back at Sherwood Forest, Dinah unveils the new Black Canary costume. As I said before, she has ditched the blonde wig and is going au naturel with her butch black haircut. Her stylish blue jacket has been replaced by a black leather biker's jacket, and her leotard kind of top is now a black one-piece corset or bodice thing that looks like what a dominatrix would wear. No more high-heeled pirate boots, she's wearing tactical combat flats. But she's still wearing the fishnets. For just this one page. Then they're gone for the rest of the issue. Black Canary and Huntress walk to a coffee shop. A coffee shop in Seattle in the 90s? Go on. No, really. Where Helena fills in more of the details about Scimitar's slavery racket, basically explaining why a guy who is already part of a royal family would bother kidnapping and torturing women. The barista tips Black Canary off that there are some strangers watching them through the window, and she tells him to get lost before they fight. The bad guys come in, Black Canary and Huntress beat them up, there's some unnecessarily boring business with a tracker and a taxicab, and eventually the two superheroines get to the harbor. The ladies sneak past the guardhouse, but Black Canary has a different idea. She picks up the guard's station with a forklift and drives it into the electrified fence, trapping the men inside. Finally, the women arrive at Scimitar's harem ship. Dinah tells Helena to take the motorboat around to the other side, while she climbs up the great iron anchor chain, finds Beth, and sneaks her over the side. Black Canary climbs up using two cargo hooks, like the kind that the killer used in that movie I Know What You Did Last Summer. She's nearly to the top when Scimitar reveals that he knew they were there. His men fire a rocket launcher at Huntress's boat, blowing it up. Then Dinah is knocked out and wakes up in the harem with Scimitar looming over her, intending to make her his latest bride. And that's where the first chapter ends. Okay, let's start off with the good. And surprisingly, there's more good than I expected. This issue really crept up on me. I remembered hating it because of the new costume and the cover, but it's actually the best issue by Sarah Byam and Trevor Von Eden we've had so far, and there are a number of reasons for that. First, the art. Given how terrible the cover is, Von Eden's pencils on the inside aren't bad. They're not great, but he seems to have toned down that inflated balloon people look he gave Black Canary and the others in the earlier issues in favor of something that's just a little bit more cartoonish. It's not my preference, it still feels like it's lacking, but it's also not really art that I can say is objectively terrible. Maybe Trevor Von Eden was burning himself out in the first 7 issues, maybe the fill-in by James Hodgkins gave him time to recharge and put a little more detail and craft into the story. I mean, that doesn't excuse the dog shit cover art, though. As for the story, this is the best issue that Sarah Byam has written yet. There's simply more to read. Most of her issues were underwritten to the point of confusion and not connecting with the visuals. This chapter has a lot more text, but it's also not overwritten. It flows, you know, like a normal comic should. I don't think Sarah Byam ever had a handle on Dinah, what she felt or how she talked. They just weren't fitting. Right off the bat, with this issue, Byam sounds like she's a lot more comfortable with the Huntress. By having Helena narrate the story, she gives her a voice and a personality, but it also gives us a lens through which the Huntress views the Black Canary, and that actually gives us a better sense of how tough and how cool under pressure Dinah typically is. As crazy as this sounds, Sarah Byam was never able to depict how great Black Canary was until she had another character watch her. Now, I don't think this sudden uptick in the quality of writing is because Sarah Byam had an extra month to prepare the story. I don't think she woke up one day a better writer than she had been for the previous 2 years. More likely, this story was handed down and shepherded by the new editors, Jordan Garfinkel and Denny O'Neill. The previous editor was Mike Gold. He edited the first 7 issues. Before that, he edited Black Canary's 4-issue miniseries from 1991, and he edited her first story arc in Action Comics Weekly. Now, Mike Gold edited a lot of books, really, really good books, but when it came to Black Canary, I know he liked the character, but he never got anything good out of her. Her stories sucked under his editorial stewardship. In fact, the Black Canary story Bitter Fruit from Action Comics Weekly that Gold edited is probably the worst Black Canary story ever told, not counting her appearances in the New 52, Birds of Prey, and Team 7. But the second story, Knock 'Em Dead, edited by Bob Greenberger, is one of my favorite Black Canary stories. So, in the 2 issues since Denny O'Neil and Jordan Garfinkel took over this series, we've seen a dramatic improvement in the art and story from fill-ins and the regular team. What we haven't seen is very much Black Canary. Issue 8 was James Owsley writing the further adventures of the Ray that happened to coincide with a Black Canary story. And this issue is O'Neil pushing another of his Bat family characters into the action. This is really the Huntress's story. Dinah's just along for the ride. And she doesn't even look like the Dinah we know. That's my biggest problem with this issue, the costume change. I hate it, and looking at it 20 years removed, I just shake my head and groan. But at the time, it was an inevitable shakeup. The writing was on the wall, figuratively and almost literally. DC Comics hated Black Canary's classic look. They changed it for the first time in the early 80s, right before Crisis on Infinite Earths. The new look, which was sometimes called the Jazzercise look, that actually might be an irredeemable shag phrase, was designed by Vincent DiStefano and debuted in Detective Comics 554, drawn by Jerome Moore. She wore that costume throughout the mid-80s and during her post-Crisis debut in Legends and Justice League. Mike Grell put her back in the Fishnets costume in the Longbow Hunters and his Green Arrow run in the late 80s, but even then there was a time when she ditched the wig again and wore like a black tactical jumpsuit like Black Widow. Like I said, I love the old costume, but that was not the majority opinion if you read the letters column in the New Wings miniseries or this Black Canary ongoing. Every issue featured at least one letter from someone complaining that Black Canary needed a new look, that the fishnet stockings were silly and antiquated, that the high heels were impractical, that she didn't look tough enough. So, DC retooled her look to be as shamefully, obviously hardcore as they could imagine in 1993. Biker chick crossed with S&M dominatrix. This wasn't just a tougher look, this was supposed to be a sexier look. They made that point in the story. Huntress tells her the stockings aren't sexy anymore, so by extension, the bare legs and the black leather must have been more tantalizing. Hey, I've got no problem with the bondage black leather look, but it's just not my preferred kink. This version of Black Canary is about the unsexiest version I can think of. I mentioned the part where Black Canary reveals her new costume, and at first she's still wearing the fishnets. Huntress comments on that, asking, "Weren't you going to nix the fishnets?" And Dinah replies, "Screw 'em if they can't take a joke." And the next page she has, in fact, ditched the fishnets. That scene, that line, "Screw 'em if they can't take a joke," was directed at the fans. The people who wanted her look to change and hated the fishnets? That's the editor saying, "We'll give you what you asked for, but first we're going to piss you off by looking like we've changed everything except for the thing that you most wanted us to change." It's bizarrely metatextual and breaking the fourth wall and not funny. Maybe because I first read it 2 decades after the fact, but it just sounds juvenile and stupid. The last thing I want to mention is the new villain, Scimitar. I've said it before, Black Canary needs a better rogues gallery, so it's very cool that we get a villain with a name and a clearly defined look in this issue. Okay, Scimitar with a Y is a little dated and hokey, but it's by no means bad, and as far as his look goes, he's a big damn Arab-looking dude with no shirt and a big-ass sword on his belt. He looks like a clean-shaven Khal Drogo, which is a great look, and he runs a human slavery ring, which is an awesome villain for a hero like Black Canary. Everything about this guy sounds cool, except I can't separate the character from the world events that have taken place since this issue came out. They give this story, particularly this character, a kind of weird feeling. He's not a racist caricature of Middle Eastern culture, but there is still an uneasiness in how I feel about this guy that I can't shake. Maybe it's my own white guilt in not wanting to see Arabs unjustly depicted as monsters in the wake of 9/11. I don't know. And I also wonder if this plot was based on any real stories. It feels a little familiar. I kind of remember hearing stories about white American women marrying Saudi princes or something and suffering horrible tragedies when they found out, hey, it wasn't like Princess Grace of Monaco. But I don't know where I'm getting that memory from. Was it history? Was it the news? Or was it an episode of Law and Order? I don't know. So, overall, this issue was about as close as this series gets to a good issue. The art wasn't great, but it's better than it has been. The story was engaging and the characters felt more compelling and fully formed, even though Black Canary gets thrust into the background of her own series for the second month in a row. This seems like a positive new direction for the book. Of course, by this point, they probably would have known that it was going to be canceled anyway. Well, where does this three-part story go from here? Find out after this short commercial break.
Who here likes comic books? Who likes superheroes? Who likes superhero comic books? From the 90s! That's what I thought. Hey there. I'm Nathaniel Wayne from the Council of Geeks, and though I've always loved superheroes, the only time I was buying monthly issues was during the much maligned 1990s. I've decided to go through my personal collection, issue by issue, and in my own little way, try to answer the question, were 90s comics really that bad? Chances are the answer will be yes, but I think these books deserve another chance, and they're going to get it. On 90s Comics Retrial, part of the Council of Geeks podcast, available on iTunes and at 90scomicsretrial.wordpress.com.
Black Canary issue 10 is cover dated October 1993. The on sale date, according to Mike's Amazing World, was August 24th, 1993. The cover is by Trevor Von Eden, who looks like he spent more than 5 minutes working on it this time. Perhaps because he knew this would be the last cover he did for the series. That's right, issues 11 and 12 feature different cover artists. So how does Von Eden's final cover rate? It's not bad. Dinah stands defiantly over one of Scimitar's victims who has been slashed on the lower leg. I think the implication is that her hamstring has been severed, so she'll never be able to walk right. Dinah looks tough-ish in her new black leather getup, but she's statuesque. She's too rigid. There's no life or emotion in her face or posture. She's also still pushed to the background. The foreground image is Scimitar's blade, which is dripping blood. The thing is, because of the positioning, the blood is running off the edge of the blade with Dinah's bare legs behind it. The longest trail of blood is hanging right below where her lady parts would be, and the result is this weirdly menstrual image that once you see, you can't unsee. I don't think Trevor Von Eden was thinking about that when he drew the cover, but that's kind of part of the problem. I don't think he put a lot of thought into his work on this book. Oh, and the cover text says guest starring Huntress and Nightwing, so we've got that to look forward to. Part 2 of the story opens with Black Canary back in the narrator's seat explaining how she's a captive on Scimitar's harem ship, which is sailing back to Karistan. And Dinah assumes that Huntress was killed by the rocket-propelled grenade that blew up her speedboat. But we see what Dinah did not, that Huntress jumped off the boat just before it exploded. Scimitar welcomes Black Canary aboard his boat in his own fashion, which includes tossing her his personal blade and telling her that the only way she can avoid the same fate as the other women on the ship is by killing him. To do that, she'll have to fight a whole bunch of his boys, though. Black Canary kicks the knife at the face of one of her attackers, and the blade slices his face, blinding him in one eye. She easily takes out three attackers, breaking legs, breaking faces. It's pretty brutal. Scimitar tells her she should have kept the knife, because the next wave of attackers use cricket paddles, and they overwhelm her. While she's being beaten senseless, Dinah comments on how the Karis are known for hating and killing strong women. After she passes out, Scimitar has his men wake her up by dumping water on her head. Black Canary is neither impressed nor intimidated by this brand of torture, since she already suffered something worse a couple of years ago, during the Longbow Hunters. But while she has taken worse beatings, she is physically and mentally exhausted when she finally fights Scimitar, and he knocks her out with one punch and one kick. None of the women in the harem react in any way. They have no sense of life or identity or will. That's all been extinguished or bled out of them. While all this is going on, the Huntress is nearly drowning in Puget Sound. The explosion briefly knocked her unconscious, but she comes to just in time and manages to pull herself back up to the surface. When she gets to dry land, Huntress seeks out a Seattle mobster named Tanini, whose father knew her father. She demands access to a net-based computer terminal, God bless 1993, and says if Tanini doesn't cooperate, another gangster named Frankie Mignola will be very upset. It turns out that Frankie the Mig is Helena's friend Beth's father. He's the one who sent Huntress looking for her after she got involved with Scimitar. Huntress needs to follow Scimitar to Karistan to rescue Beth and possibly Black Canary, but as a woman, she won't be able to move about freely in the country. She needs a partner, a man specifically. She uses the computer to ask Oracle to help her find Nightwing. We see Barbara Gordon relaxing in a bubble bath just as the Huntress reaches out to her. By the way, shout out to Stella's Batgirl and Oracle podcast. Anyway, Huntress secures passage for herself and Nightwing to Karistan, paid for by Tanini and the Seattle mob. Black Canary wakes up aboard the ship, but she's in too much pain to do much of anything except cry. One of Scimitar's slave women tends to Dinah's bruises, washes her hair, washes her feet, but the woman will not speak, nor will she stop when Dinah protests, and when she needs to refill the bowl of water, she crawls over to the faucet. At that point, Dinah makes two realizations, the first that she hasn't seen any of the women in the harem walk upright, and the second that the slave treating her now is Bethy Mignola, Huntress's friend, who acts like a robot with no will or anima. Nightwing and Huntress arrive in Karistan ahead of Scimitar's ship. Helena tells Dick that her plan is to gather intelligence and then get help from the American consulate to rescue her friends. But as they're walking through town, Helena makes the mistake of stepping in front of a mullah, a highly revered religious figure. Well, the woman-bashing, Western-hating people of Karistan don't take kindly to this ridiculous offense, and they attack Huntress and Nightwing. The two heroes make a run for it with the full-on mob chasing them. They climb over a wall at the end of the blind alley and head for the consulate building. Meanwhile, Scimitar's ship arrives and his cargo, which is mostly the women of his harem, is offloaded. As Scimitar disembarks, his servants tell him that they have arranged for a procession to present the newly acquired property to Scimitar's father, King Hafid. Dinah mocks him, saying none of these acquisitions are going to impress his father. He's still the number two son and will never be Daddy's favorite. Well, Scimitar don't like that, so he slaps Dinah and has his men tape her mouth shut. Huntress and Nightwing leap into the American ambassador's office through the window where they lay out the whole situation, how Scimitar is kidnapping American brides as sex slaves, but the ambassador will not help them. He's either being bribed by the Kari royal family, or the U.S. has precarious political arrangements with the Emirate. Either way, Helena and Dick will get no help from the embassy. Quite the opposite, in fact, the ambassador is willing to feed the heroes to the angry mob outside. Nightwing and Huntress leave the embassy and fight their way past security, complaining about the politics of human rights the whole time. Finally, Scimitar presents the vast holdings that he has acquired in his travels, material wealth, lucrative property rights, and hundreds of women, all taken by seduction, coercion, extortion, or outright force. And none of it seems to impress Scimitar's father or his brother. At last, Scimitar offers them their choice of his brides, and the king asks if the women have been properly prepared, meaning have their hamstrings been sliced to ensure that the women cannot walk or run away. Scimitar is about to do just that to Black Canary when Bethy steps forward and volunteers to be the first prince's new wife. And that is where part two ends. So, this issue wasn't that good, nor was it really bad. It was largely forgettable. It was just about getting the different players to Karistan. Something that is very common in Black Canary stories, almost a regular fixture going back to her earliest appearances in the Golden Age, is that we're told Black Canary is a world-class fighter, but we see her get her ass kicked time and time again. She takes out a couple of unarmed goons in swift and brutal fashion, but then she gets bludgeoned by cricket paddles. And then she faces off against Scimitar, but the story makes the excuse that she's hurt and tired, so Scimitar beats the hell out of her and she's captured. Now she's in the position of being held captive, tortured, potentially raped, and Sarah Byam makes the point of addressing that this has happened to her before. We remember what happened to her in The Longbow Hunters. Just pointing this out doesn't feel like it's enough. We need to see Black Canary rise above this type of low point. Otherwise, why does she go out and fight crime if she's going to keep getting hurt? She doesn't quit. There's no point where you imagine she'll ever be broken mentally and emotionally like Beth or the other slaves in Scimitar's harem. But that doesn't matter if she's still hamstrung and enslaved. We also don't get the Huntress's personality in this issue's narration. Black Canary is telling the story again, and her voice is pretty flat and emotionless, as always. Speaking of the Huntress, she still has more of an interesting part in the story, because while Dinah is a captive victim for much of the issue, Helena is proactive. She uses her mob connections to her advantage, she contacts Oracle, she recruits Nightwing, she defends herself in the street when the Kari's attack her, she fights the security in the U.S. Embassy when they come to arrest her. Huntress gets to do a whole lot more than Black Canary in this issue. But the story still feels like it's spinning its wheels a little. A lot of this feels like filler. And it's nice to see Dick Grayson, but honestly, I'm not sure why he's in this issue. I get the necessity to partner Huntress with another hero, and a man specifically for traveling around Karistan, but she could have partnered with anybody. I'm glad she didn't reach out to Green Arrow, because the last thing the series needed was Ollie coming to Dinah's rescue right after they broke up. But really, anybody with a Y chromosome would have been capable of helping. But Huntress was firmly in the back corner of the DC Universe that Denny O'Neil was running, as was Nightwing at this point, so I think he wanted Huntress to connect with the other secondary Batman characters. And that's one of the better parts of dialogue in this issue, when Dick and Helena talk about operating in Batman's shadow. Again, I think this is largely Denny O'Neil influencing the story, maybe even on the dialogue and character level. As for the art in this issue, it's like the last one. It's not good. I don't like the art, but I can't point to any specific detail and think that art is technically wrong or objectively awful. It's all personal taste stuff, I think. I mean, it's entirely possible that I've just looked at this stuff too much and I don't see it anymore. So to sum up, this issue was frustrating because Huntress and Nightwing got to do stuff while Black Canary got beaten up and captured again. But even as Huntress and Nightwing are doing stuff, it doesn't feel like it's important. Alright, we're going to take one more promo break. After that, the final chapter in this three-part story.
Salwete. My name is Stella, and I am the host of Batgirl to Oracle, the Barbara Gordon podcast. Batgirl to Oracle is a podcast dedicated to Barbara Gordon, the first woman to hold the mantle of Batgirl for an extended period of time, roughly 1967 to 1988. The goal of Batgirl to Oracle is to examine the character's history from her first appearance as Batgirl and continuing through her tenure as Oracle. Each episode looks at a vintage issue of Detective Comics or Batman, as well as other books like Justice League and Freedom Fighters, and modern issues of Batgirl and Birds of Prey. I also keep track of news involving Batgirl and other members of the Bat family, and I have a revolving series of segments like Babs in the Tube, which highlights appearances of Babs in TV and film, Shipper Spotlight, which looks at a variety of comic and pop culture couples, gives their history, and determines whether they are hot or not, Reading with Stella, which could be described as an audio drama, or just me reading a book that relates to Babs or doesn't, and of course, the mainstay literature recommendation. I have been blessed to interview writers Scott Beatty and Chuck Dixon on their Batgirl Year One work, Brian Q. Miller on his Batgirl run, Dwayne Swierczynski and Christy Marks on their separate Birds of Prey work, and the creators and actors of the Batgirl Spoiled, the web series. I hope to interview more creators and actors in the future. My goal, most importantly, is to make a fun, entertaining, and thoughtful show that people enjoy and from which they learn. Find the show online at thebatmanuniverse.net and iTunes, and follow the show on Facebook and Twitter at Batgirl to Oracle. Thank you, and fly on, Babs lovers.
Black Canary issue 11 was cover dated November 1993, but would have hit the streets on September 21st. The cover... Well, the cover is drawn by the legendary Jim Aparo, and by that simple virtue, Black Canary probably looks better than she did on the 10 previous covers, even if she is in her new hardcore look. But it's still not a very good cover. It's just like the cover to issue 9. Dinah is carrying Bethy Mignola, who looks unconscious or dead, in her arms, And that's it. There is no background or other detail. The background colors, in fact, are the same twilight fade as issue 9, except they're reversed, so it almost creates this partnership in the covers to 9 and 11, but that just makes the cover to issue 10 stand out as out of place. At least the scale is better. Black Canary is about half the height of the cover, but she's still off to the side, and we get text running down the left side saying, "Free the prisoners." And after a night of pain and terrible violence, there can be only mercy. It's a little on the nose. It's a little terrible, actually. It's awful, awful. It makes me want to not read this issue. The last thing about the cover I'll say is this is very close to the end of Jim Aparo's long and illustrious career. His style and his mastery had certainly declined by the 90s, and his inkers usually brought a lot more to the page. The inker on this cover is credited as Steve George. I have no idea who that was. According to Mike's Amazing World of Comics, this is his only credit. He, or she, I guess, might have been a staffer or an assistant brought in to clean up the rough pencil sketch. I have a feeling that's what it was, but it's always possible it was somebody's pseudonym. Okay, what happens in this issue? This third chapter is narrated not by Black Canary or Huntress, but rather Nightwing, perhaps justifying the third different letterer. Dick and Helena have escaped the Karistan city and made their way to a munitions depot in the desert outside of town, which just happens to be run by a former Gotham mobster named Tony Carnevale. Nightwing's narration explains not just what he and Huntress are doing in Karistan, but also how Tony ended up here at the behest of Bethy Mignola's father. It's the Mignola connection that Huntress uses to enlist Tony's help in rescuing Bethy and Black Canary. Speaking of those two, back at the Karistan docks, Prince Scimitar presents more than 100 slave women to his father, King Hafid. He just offered to give the unconscious Dinah over to his father when Bethy volunteered herself as a more worthy wife for the king. Scimitar slaps Bethy for speaking out of turn. This leads to some mockery and bickering between siblings, as the Crown Prince Hassan says he wants Dinah as his bride, and Scimitar refuses to spite his older brother. The king admonishes Scimitar's petty jealousy and declares that Dinah now belongs to Prince Hassan. Dinah wakes up in the prince's chambers, expecting to soon be hamstrung like the rest of the slaves in Karistan. Hassan tells her that is not his way, and tries to convince her that he is slightly, ever so slightly, more progressive in his view of human rights than the majority of his country. Dinah says if he doesn't maim her, she is likely to kill him the first chance she gets. Hassan tells her that would be a bad idea. If she's captured, her death would be unbearable. And if she managed to escape, the U.S. would not protect her, because they need good relations with Karistan more than they need a fugitive Black Canary. Hassan gives her a change of clothes and continues to try to convince her to make the most of her situation. He tells her he would like to change some of Karistan's more barbaric and arcane customs, but that would mean defying his father, and if he goes against the king, Hafid will just put Scimitar on the throne. Then Hassan and Dinah get into a debate about whether the treatment of women in America is really any better than it is here. Huntress and Nightwing roll into Karistan on the tank driven by Tony Carnevale, who explains that his outfit moves munitions, including tanks, through Karistan all the time, so this is their best way of infiltrating the city and getting the vigilantes close enough to the royal palace. Nevertheless, his bluff fails and Tony needs to shoot a guard before they blow down the door to let them into the city. Huntress drives the tank, navigating around and sometimes over the Karistan army, eventually rolling up the steps of the royal palace and blasting the front door. Across town, the U.S. ambassador gets word of what is happening and rushes to the palace to defuse the situation. With Hassan gone to find out who is attacking his home, Dinah manages to escape from her chambers and stealthily sneak around the palace. She finds Bethy and asks the girl to help her find the exit, but Bethy only leads Dinah to Scimitar and his men. Scimitar tells his father that Hassan is unable to defend the palace from attack or control his own wife. He asks King Hafid to give him Black Canary and the authority to fight off Nightwing and Huntress, and the king says, "Okay, give it a shot." At last, the tank smashes through the wall of the palace. Scimitar demands that Huntress and the others surrender, or he'll slice Dinah's leg, crippling her. Before one of them can flinch, however, the ambassador shows up and brokers Dinah's release from the king, saying her captivity was all a misunderstanding between different cultures and that there is no reason they can't all be friends. Dinah demands the release of the other women, too, but they are all legally married to Prince Scimitar, and none of the women will speak out and say they're being held against their will. So Dinah challenges Scimitar to trial by combat as part of the Kari custom. If he wins, he can kill Black Canary. If she wins, she gets all of the slave girls. Scimitar chooses his dagger as his weapon. Black Canary chooses only her fists. This time, Dinah isn't tired or hurting, and Scimitar doesn't stand a chance. She disarms him quickly. He wraps her up with his huge arms, trying to crush her, but she uses her fingers to crush a nerve cluster in his arm. She toys with him, lets him get his weapon back, and keeps on kicking him without breaking a sweat. And all of Scimitar's slave women start to take notice that he's not so invincible. At last, she gives Scimitar a chance to surrender. Instead, he tries to slash her. She breaks his leg, takes his dagger, and smashes his face, leaving him unconscious on the floor. The issue ends with a victorious Black Canary lifting Bethy up and carrying her away. Like the others, the third chapter had some good things and some bad. The best part is, of course, Black Canary kicking the crap out of Scimitar. It's well-earned, well-deserved, and fairly well-choreographed in that there are several distinct beats to the fight, and it's easy to follow. And not only is it good to see Black Canary win this fight and really take down a brutal physical male villain, that's all great for Black Canary fans, but it almost comes as surprising because Dinah was very much a passenger for most of this story. Starting with Huntress crashing through her window and dragging her onto her own operation, Dinah has been almost secondary for most of the story, but in the end, it comes down to her kicking ass. Huntress doesn't rescue Bethy in this story. Nightwing doesn't do anything. And the system fails, ultimately. The politicians are corrupt. No one is there to protect these enslaved women, so it all comes down to a fight between Black Canary and Scimitar. Simple good versus evil. It's the most agency Dinah gets in all three issues, so I guess it's nice that it comes at the climax. And yet there's still something weird about the ending, because it's not feminist, it's not inspirational. The women don't rise up and take command of their lives after being brutalized by Scimitar. In fact, the last shot is Black Canary walking away, carrying Bethy away from the altar, like. Now Black Canary is her new husband. These women are still slaves. Ownership has just changed through the trial by combat. That's it. I said that Nightwing doesn't do anything in this story, but that's not exactly true. He actually gets the best thing to do by narrating the fight and giving us the best descriptions for Black Canary's fighting we've got, I think, in all 11 issues. He says, "It's like watching a master at work. Years before, I'd taken training from her mother, the first Black Canary in Gotham. And she had this little trick of letting you get in the first couple of hits, just to see what you were made of. This Canary lets him have one. I wouldn't have been in that man's shoes for anything in the world." Like the previous issues, Trevor Von Eden's art is decent. It's not great, but it's not as bad as it has been in the earlier issues. I don't know if the editors reined him in or anything, but the only real ugly image is, once again, when Dinah is lying down on the princess bedchambers. The anatomy is weird and unnatural. Trevor Von Eden should not draw people in that position anymore. It's never good. The rest of the art is fine. I think Von Eden put less detail and time into the characters' faces and more into background details like setting and clothing. I will say there is a sort of nice finality to the last image, given that it's the last picture Trevor Von Eden drew for the series. He worked on Black Canary a lot, going back to World's Finest and then her miniseries and now this. The last time he draws her, he gets to draw her in a moment of triumph. She's saving lives, she's protecting a woman and taking her away to safety. No, I don't like this version of Dinah's appearance, but the moment, the victory of this farewell image, that is a good look for Black Canary. All told, this was a 3-issue story arc that could have been 2 issues. Huntress didn't really add anything after her first initial issue, and Nightwing brought nothing of value to the table. Obviously, their presence didn't help the sales figures, because the editor running the letters column at the end of this issue announces that issue 12 will be the final issue. And that issue will be covered next episode, the final episode of Flowers and Fishnets. What do I mean by that? The last episode of the year or the last episode ever? You'll have to tune into the show to find out. Before I go, yes, I have gotten a ton of responses to the last episode. A lot of you seem keen to win a free copy of Black Canary and Zatanna Bloodspell, As I said, the contest winners will be chosen on December 12th, and assuming I get them notified, the winner will be announced to all on the next episode. And that does it for now. If you enjoyed the show, you can leave a comment on the blogger page, blackcanaryfan.blogspot.com. There you can contact me with any questions or comments. You can also find me on Facebook and on Twitter using the handle @blackcanaryfan or @RyanDaily01. Or you can search the username Count Druncula. Flowers and Fishnets is not affiliated with DC Comics, and the views expressed on this show are mine alone. All music, audio clips, and quoted text are used for entertainment purposes and are believed covered under fair use. And I make no money off this podcast, so no copyright infringement is intended. Thanks for listening.